dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space for the war for the free world. And in that battle space, we have been calling a lot of attention to the degree to which every other effort in the battle space is made more difficult because we seem to be failing to understand what the enemy is doing right here at home, right under our noses, and indeed inside the wire of our government. Fortunately, one of the people who is fully alive to that danger and has done perhaps as much as anybody to document it, help the rest of us understand what's going on and urge corrective action is our guest for this very special hour. He is Patrick Poole, a national security and counterterrorism correspondent for PJ Media. He was one of the contributors to the Team B2 book, Sharia, the Threat to America, and the author of myriad of extraordinarily important investigative pieces that have exposed some of the civilization jihad that the enemy is waging right here inside the United States. Patrick Poole, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It is great to have you with us.
Glad to be with you, Frank.
Well, the occasion for this particular visit and our deep dive with you is a particularly important contribution you've just made to our understanding of this particular threat and, again, the need for corrective action. It was published by the Middle East Review of International Affairs in their summer 2013 edition. I believe just yesterday it came out. You and I had a chance to visit a little bit about it on the set of Glenn Beck's program. It was great to see you there and to get a little bit more of a flavor of what you've been doing to help document the extent to which penetration has been going on now, not just under the Obama administration, but for some time. Give us a sense of how you got into this, your background, and why this has taken so much of your attention of late.
Well, my background is actually public policy, having worked in Washington, D.C., up on the Hill, and various state-based free market think tanks, things of that sort. So, you know, I have a background in doing public policy research, and you know, really how I got into this was moving back to Ohio, to my hometown, and come to find out that Columbus had become a bit of a hotspot and for jihadist activity. We had the largest known Al-Qaeda cell since 9/11. In Columbus, and several members of which are in federal prison. One was just recently deported after serving his prison sentence. And how I got really involved in it is I discovered that here in my hometown of Hilliard, Ohio, this cow town I grew up in, we had a senior internationally known Hamas cleric living here in Hilliard. And that's how I first started researching the topic of the Muslim Brotherhood in America and domestic terrorism was really out of personal self-interest. I mean, this
survival
was a story that was happening. Yeah, it was happening right in my own hometown. And amazingly, as I began to research the issue and continue to write about the Muslim Brotherhood and I began getting phone calls from government agencies saying, "Hey, can you, you know, can you come talk to us about what you know?" And so, you know, that kind of got me in deeper, and I began to, you know, publish more investigative pieces, and alas, here I am.
Well, alas, good for us, needless to say, that you've taken this on as such an important work, Patrick Poole. The lengthy treatment, shortly to appear in a monograph form, is entitled Blind to Terror, the U.S. Government's Disastrous Muslim Outreach Efforts and the Impact on U.S. Middle East Policy. So take us from Columbus, Ohio, where you began to become steeped in these issues and a consultant of counsel, if you will, to government agencies that are supposed to be protecting us against it, Patrick, to the sort of compilation that you've done here. This presumably reflects, in addition, obviously, to your own past research, a sense that this problem, despite your best efforts and those of a lot of other people, including the people that you were consulting with for a time, is getting worse, not better. How did you sort of come to that realization that we're really on the bad side of the power curve, as they say, in terms of penetration by Islamists, the Muslim Brotherhood among them, inside the wire of our government?
Well, this article was really born out of the Boston bombings back in April. I got a phone call from the Boston JTTF that evening.
Joint Terrorism Task Force.
The FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force in Boston, asking me if there was anybody that I was watching that they needed to look at, which indicated to me that they had absolutely no idea who this was. My hat's off to them. I mean, they called and asked, and I gave them the information I had.
Right.
In the days that followed, and it became clear that particularly the older brother of the Tsarnaev bomber brothers. The United States government, and in particular the FBI, had been notified by Russian authorities that, look, you guys need to look at this. And they looked at him and, didn't see anything, despite the fact he was attending a mosque that had birthed at least two other terrorists currently in federal prison, Ifia Siddiqui and Tariq Mehena. For one small mosque, in suburban Boston, and he had been meeting with all the cast of characters over in Dagestan and, over in Russia.
Chechnya.
And they had all the indicators. And this is a problem that we've seen repeatedly in well-known cases, in reported cases, and in fact, cases that I've particularly been involved with. Back after Fort Hood, Bill Gertz, the veteran Pentagon reporter, had a front-page article in the Washington Times about the fact that myself and Lieutenant Colonel Joe Myers and one of our other colleagues, we had briefed the Army, the entire U.S. Army's anti-terrorism force protection force, from all over the world, hundreds of their officers, precisely on the kinds of indicators that would have tipped them off to Major Hassan. And in fact, I ended up speaking at that same U.S. Army conference about 6 weeks after Fort Hood. And, that's when Department of Defense rolled out their initial report.
Their after-action assessment, right?
Yeah, which didn't even mention Major Hassan by name. And in fact, all of the armed services ended up doing reports, as I note in this journal article in Middle East Review for International Affairs this week. None of those reports issued by the military services ever mentioned Major Hassan's radical Islamic ideology that motivated him to do this.
Yep.
And there are repeated incidents. In fact, you know, another incident related to here. And
hold that thought, because before we leave that subject, we're going to have to take a short break, and I'm going to come back with more with Patrick Poole, the author of a marvelous new lengthy analysis of the U.S. government's disastrous Muslim outreach efforts and the impact on U.S. Middle East policy. It's entitled Blind to Terror. It's published by Meria, the Middle East International Affairs Journal. A terrific publication and must reading if you are interested in this subject. And when we come back, Pat, I want to talk a bit about what the willful blindness has resulted in, not just in the case of the Boston bombing and Fort Hood, but much more broadly. And we'll be back with that and much, much more in a special hour-long interview with Patrick Poole, one of our country's leading counterterrorism and national security experts and correspondents for PJ Media. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're We're back with Patrick Poole. He is the author, most recently, of a brand new monograph-length essay entitled Blind to Terror, the U.S. Government's Disastrous Muslim Outreach Efforts and the Impact on U.S. Middle East Policy. And Patrick, before the break, we were visiting a little bit about Fort Hood, and I just want to complete the thought. It's in the news today that Nidal Hassan, the defendant in that massacre on an army installation now, what is it, almost 4 years ago, I believe, is still playing games. The latest is that he now wants the court to allow him to represent himself and that he will defend himself on the grounds that he was, in fact, justified in his actions because he was trying to protect others, specifically people in Afghanistan, from harm that these infidels who were his comrades might be about to perpetrate. This doesn't sound like this is going to be a defense that would have any merit or standing under U.S. law, but what about Sharia, Patrick Poole?
Well, absolutely. It's countenanced by Islamic law. And in fact, in his many PowerPoint presentations he did before the attack, which he gave to his army colleagues, that's precisely what he had said, is that, attacking fellow Muslims would endanger his soul of hellfire. Now, apparently, attacking non-Muslims is completely fine. And in fact, his reading is correct that, yes, that's prohibited under Islamic law.
And it's alternatively kind of defensive jihad, isn't it, that compels a Sharia-adherent Muslim like Nidal Hassan to use force against those who might be about to engage in that sort of attack on Muslims.
And getting back to the willful blindness, the FBI knew that Hassan had been communicating by email with Anwar Al-Awlaki, and the FBI statement put out just a couple of days after the shooting said, well, we looked at that, and the discussions were fairly benign. Well, even Al-Awlaki himself was interviewed by Al Jazeera. He said, yeah, we were talking about killing enemy soldiers and the religious justification.
We were talking a little bit about what you are seeing now in terms of willful blindness in places like the Justice Department. We've discussed how it has blinded the FBI in the Sarnaev issue, blinded the Army, blinded the Justice Department, it seems, blinded military prosecutors perhaps even to what Nidal Hassan has been up to. And I think we can run that same string out on any number of these other actual or narrowly adverted terrorist attacks. What, in your estimation, is the principal impetus for this blindness? Is it that we actually have been relying upon those who are themselves aligned with this Sharia doctrine, who are inside the wire, or is it the sentiments and attitudes of those they're working with in the Obama administration, or both?
Well, yeah, I think it's both. Clearly, the United States government, and it's a bipartisan problem, has continued to pick known bad actors as their Muslim outreach partners to advise them. And I give a number of case studies in this new journal article. Abdurrahman Al-Amoudi, who's currently in federal prison, who was the State Department's goodwill ambassador to the Middle East. Sami Al-Aryan, who was meeting with Karl Rove in the White House and taking meetings with the U.S. Attorney General. And in fact, during his terrorism trial, his attorney subpoenaed documents from the U.S. government about all of his meetings in the White House and with the U.S. attorney. And then you have Anwar Al-Awlaki, who was leading prayers inside the United States Capitol for Muslim congressional staffers, and lecturing in the executive dining room of the Pentagon just a couple weeks after three of his disciples flew a plane into that building.
Unbelievable.
And we ended up, Obama ended up, authorizing a drone strike to kill him. That's an example of the past failures, and now many of the associates of those same individuals, Al-Amoudi, Al-Aryan, Al-Awlaki, are continuing to advise the United States. The problem I identify in the journal article is we have this schizophrenic policy on the part of the U.S. government. They go into federal court. They say these organizations and leaders are tied to terrorism. And no sooner had they left federal court, they turn to those same Islamic organizations and leaders and say, these are moderates and these are our outreach partners, and we're going to bring them in to advise us on our counterterrorism policies.
It's just unbelievable. And Patrick, again, that speaks to the intent of the individuals who are not Muslim as much as it does those who are not because they're Muslim, perhaps, but because they are definitely propounding this doctrine of Sharia and seeking to impose it on the rest of us. They are Muslim, to be sure, but they are also of this particular stripe that thinks that this is God's will, that it will be imposed on everybody. So both of these things are at work. Let me ask you before we leave this topic, Patrick Poole, to just explain one character who you allude to in your piece, but who was very much tied in with Abdurrahman al-Amoudi and Sami al-Aryan and Karl Rove, namely Grover Norquist. What role does he play, or did he in the Bush years in particular, in this drama?
Well, in both the case of al-Amoudi and al-Aryan, Grover Norquist was literally walking them into the White House.
Wow.
You know, we know that Norquist was, you know, through his Janus Merritt lobbying firm, was taking money from a number of foreign governments, you know, the embassy of Malaysia, you know, a number of Islamic governments, and he was also taking money. You know, we have the checks that al-Amoudi wrote to spin up Grover's Islamic Free Market Institute, which you're very familiar with, Frank.
Indeed. Now, just so those of you who may not be so familiar with are clear about this, this is a fellow, Grover Norquist, who runs Americans for Tax Reform, best known in Washington, certainly, and I think elsewhere in the country, for his anti-tax activism. And yet, as you say, Patrick Poole, he wound up making common cause, enlisting perhaps in the efforts of known Muslim Brotherhood operatives. In the case of the al-Amoudi fellow, as you say, he was al-Qaeda as well, and al-Aryan Palestinian Islamic Jihad, terrorist organizations both. These are unlikely bedfellows, and yet clearly there seems to have been a very concerted effort made through his offices to influence, suborn, and otherwise penetrate the conservative movement and for that matter, Republican Party and George W. Bush's administration.
Well, that's true, and it continues today. In fact, one character, Mohammed Elibiari, has kind of made his bones running around in Republican circles. But now he's taken an appointment under Napolitano's Homeland Security as a Homeland Security Advisory Council member. And, I mean, this guy's a seriously bad actor. In fact, he was a delegate to the Texas GOP convention back last summer, where we know he got into a confrontation with a member of Congress who had been concerned about LEBRE's activities and statements.
We're going to talk more about all of that with Patrick Poole, the author of Blind to Terror, the U.S. Government's Disastrous Muslim Outreach Efforts and the Impact on Middle East Policy. You can find it at the Middle East Review of International Affairs. Truly required reading, one-stop shopping on this problem of penetration of our government and the impact that it has had, the insidious impact that it has had on policy. And we'll pick up with one of the most prolific of those operators, the Muslim Brotherhood's Mohammed Elibiari.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hugh Hewitt, Q.
keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The proverbial deck chairs were officially rearranged yesterday on Team Obama's Titanic. Tom Donilon, a Democratic political operative with negligible prior defense experience, is out as the president's national security advisor. No loss there. Mr. Obama has appointed U.N. Ambassador Susan Rice to take Donilon's job. Her principal claim to fame is that she serially lied to us about the jihadist attacks in Benghazi last September. Undoubtedly, this promotion is payback for Rice's dogged loyalty to the president, not evidence she's suited to this critical post. Finally, the president wants the Senate to confirm another of his faithful apparatchiks to Susan Rice's slot at the UN. She is Samantha Power, an ideologue convinced the international community's dictates must trump America's priorities. Far from a dream team, call it a nightmare squad. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Patrick Poole is our guest for a full hour here, a very special program of Secure Freedom Radio. We're addressing most immediately a kind of compendium, a lot of the superb investigative reporting that Patrick Poole has been doing over the years. It is now available readily and online through the Middle East Review of International Affairs. The Gloria Center Israel has published this journal, and we're very grateful to Barry Rubin, who directs that center, a frequent guest here at Secure Freedom Radio. And, of course, very grateful to you, Patrick. Thank you for giving us so much of your time. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about a fellow by the name of Mohammed Elibiari. I've had the occasion of actually interacting with him a bit in an unlikely setting in conservative meeting in Dallas, Texas, his hometown. Give us a little more background, if you would, Patrick, on Elibiari, what role he's been playing, particularly in the Obama administration's Department of Homeland Security and its untoward effects.
Well, Elibiari's history really goes back to 2004, where he spoke at a conference honoring Ayatollah Khomeini, the Iranian despot, death to America, that Khomeini. And of course, when the Dallas Morning News confronted him on it, he was, I didn't know there was going to be a rally in honor of Khomeini, and but we need to, we need to embrace diversity and et cetera, and engage the, people that might think differently from us, et cetera. Well,
he even claimed not to know that Ayatollah Khomeini had these virulently anti-American and jihadist views. Isn't that right?
Right. He actually did an opposing op-ed, which the Dallas Morning News published, where, he just made a number of just, eyebrow raising claims. And, that's basically the approach he's taken, in his position as Homeland Security Advisor on the, Countering Violent Extremism Working Group, under, Department of Homeland Security. He's gotten awards from the FBI. And he's been one of the biggest cheerleaders of the purge of counterterrorism training materials of anything mentioning the doctrines of jihad and Islamic law that are inspiring terrorism.
Patrick, you have really broken the story on what he'd done in this space. It wasn't just that he was cheerleading. This guy was very much involved in the what I would consider to be sort of a world-class political influence operation that resulted in the purging of a lot of files of the FBI and other organizations. Tell us about how he did that. You mentioned that he received an award from the director of the FBI. Where did he receive that award, and what flowed from that infamous presentation?
Well, he received that award at the FBI Academy at Quantico, and several weeks later, pictures from the library at the FBI Academy at Quantico appeared in an article by Spencer Ackerman at Wired Magazine, the far-left journalist who basically led the charge on the purge of these FBI counterterrorism training materials. And lo and behold, one of the people that he quoted in the article was none other than Mohammed Elibiari, who had just happened to be visiting the FBI Academy in Quantico just a couple weeks before to receive his award. And more recently, it was reported that Elibiari was basically saying that the FBI needs to get out of the counterterrorism business and leave it to us Muslim experts. I remember the editorial he did saying that the United States shouldn't assassinate Anwar al-Awlaki. He was criticizing the prosecution of the leaders of the Holy Land Foundation, the largest terrorism financing trial in American history, because one of his mentors, Shukri Abu Bakr, was one of those who ended up getting very lengthy prison sentences as a result of that trial. So, he has very suspect statements and actions, and why precisely is he in these positions?
Well, these advisory positions, precisely. This is, of course, front and center in your new report, Blind to Terror, at Maria. Let me ask you, Patrick, it goes beyond just the purging of files. Of course, as you know, the U.S. government is now, with inputs from this Muslim brother and others, adopted guidance for what those who are using federal funds must do before they engage in training for what is euphemistically called countering violent extremism. Who must they visit with before such training or trainers are engaged?
Well, presumably it's the the Islamic organizations like ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, the Muslim Public Affairs Council. These organizations,
the so-called community leaders, as I think it's again euphemistically put. And again, Patrick, this goes to the heart of sort of what you've been writing about. Is if we think that these Muslim Brotherhood operatives are the folks with whom we must do outreach, isn't it absolutely axiomatic that what you're going to be getting is essentially subversive influence operations by these who are seeking to destroy us from within, as the Muslim Brotherhood's own mission statement calls for?
Well, absolutely. And one of the cases I cover in the Maria journal is the case of Ghulam Nabi Fai. Just to prove that this is not just an executive branch problem, Ghulam Nabi Fai operated on Capitol Hill for 20 years. He was a huge campaign contributor, and Dan Burton, the now retired former chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, was the biggest recipient of funds. And, it turns out that Ghulam Nabi Fai, for all those years, was an unregistered illegal agent for Pakistani intelligence, and is currently serving in federal prison, having pled guilty to those charges. So,
so there's a lot of willful blindness.
It's a bipartisan problem, and it's government-wide, and it's a bipartisan problem.
Let me ask you, Patrick, one of the things that I think is particularly fascinating about your analysis in the Maria Journal is the infrastructure that these guys have built. It's not just the these various individuals whose names most of us won't remember, unfortunately, but all of whom have been associated with one Islamist group or intelligence service or another. But they've also been building up the kind of capacity to run these kinds of operations. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about one that you profile a bit, which is the Prince Al-Walid bin Talal Center for Christian Muslim Understanding at Georgetown University. Remind us who Al-Walid bin Talal is, and what does this center of his do at Georgetown University?
Well, Prince Walid bin Talal is a Saudi prince. He's a multi-billionaire. He's the second largest shareholder of News Corp. He's a major shareholder in Citibank. He's a functionary of the Wahhabist regime. And, he contributed $20 million, initially $20 million to both Harvard and Georgetown to set up these centers. And the head of the center at Georgetown, John Esposito, is a longtime Brotherhood apologist. I reported here back a couple years ago about money that the Organization of Islamic Cooperation was funneling through CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, a Hamas front, according to the FBI and Department of Justice.
For
Esposito and his Georgetown center to flog the Islamophobia agenda.
Wow. Patrick Poole, we have to pause for just a moment. Hold the thought. We're going to come back on that Islamophobia agenda and what it has done to compound our blindness at the government level and to shape a policy that has empowered and enabled the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamists to become vastly more dangerous.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them.
When you make fun of them.
When you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the fourth and final segment of a very special drill down with Patrick Poole, one of the country's counterterrorism experts who currently is spending some extraordinarily important time educating the rest of us about what's been happening inside the wire, as they say, of the United States government as a result of the penetration of our civil society as well as governing agencies by the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamists. And Patrick, we were talking about one of the most successful of these operations, perhaps, the Al-Walid bin Talal Center for Christian Muslim Understanding. Talk a little bit more, if you would, about what role that organization recently played in trying to rehabilitate some of the Muslim Brotherhood fronts that were made as such in the Holy Land Foundation trial.
Well, I think a great case study that I mention in the article of somebody who was being rehabilitated was a guy by the name of Louis Safi, who ended up working at the Georgetown Center. And he had been named unindicted co-conspirator in Samuel Arian's trial, you know, has a long history of association with these Muslim Brotherhood front groups, was one of the Pentagon's top Islamic advisors, was teaching soldiers on Islam departing for the Middle East at Fort Hood and Fort Bliss. And, you know, he was a regular visitor at the White House. And in fact, 6 weeks after his last White House visit, he pops up overseas as the political director for the Syrian National Coalition. You know, and is now
a Muslim Brotherhood dominated operation over there at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, many of the opposition groups withdrew from the group because of the Muslim Brotherhood's dominance over it. And of course, he was the political director based in Qatar. So it's important to restate exactly what the Pentagon's top Islamic advisor is now the political director for the Syrian opposition backed by the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood.
Kind of tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it? How we gotten into this fix.
And there are, and I recount some of the cases. In fact, the prime minister that the Muslim Brotherhood's trying to promote in the Syrian opposition, a guy by the name of Ghassan Itto, a Dallas businessman, is, you know, a former board member of the Council on American Islamic Relations in Texas. He used to work for the Islamic Society of North America. He was a board member for the Muslim American Society. I mean, just a litany. A Muslim Brotherhood here in the United States, and he turns up, you know, in this position overseas, rather unexpectedly.
Patrick, one of the ways that this is happening, we touched about it earlier in the program, but just to get some names here. People inside the Obama administration who have been so directly associated with this Muslim outreach effort, who have at the very least enabled it and to some extent perhaps been complicit in its influence operations and undermining of us, including some people like, well, the president himself, of course, but John Brennan, his Homeland Security Advisor for the first term, now the Director of Central Intelligence. Tom Perez, an Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, now his nominee to be the Labor Secretary. Tom Donilon, the outgoing National Security Advisor. Susan Rice, the incoming National Security Advisor. Give us a flavor of these people, what kind of role they've been playing, and the extent to which that is likely to make this problem even worse in the future if they persist in this behavior.
Sure, and we can include in that list Valerie Jarrett, who has spoken at Islamic Society of North American conferences, Dennis McDonough, who's now the chief of staff for the White House. You know, there's the list is lengthy. And yeah, you mentioned Tom Perez, who most recently was the head of the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. And it's been reported that the Daily Caller by Neil Monroe, a meeting they had at George Washington University back in October 2011, where Perez was talking about with these Islamic organizations about using anti-discrimination laws, Title VI, to attack American free speech critical of Islam.
Well, this goes back to what you were talking about with the U.S. attorney in Tennessee, very much that same kind of thing, and very much joined at the hip with, for example, Mohammed Majid, one of the fellows that you describe, the president of the largest Muslim Brotherhood front in the United States. One of the things that's particularly vexing about this is that some of these folks in government seem to have been not only enabling this penetration and influence operation, but actually sending money to these sorts of Brotherhood front groups. Talk about that, Patrick Poole.
Well, one of the things I recount in the article is historically the United States government has funded many of these so-called Islamic charities and endorsed them. You know, the Holy Land Foundation, which the U.S. government prosecuted the leaders of, well, they have received the endorsement of USAID, a State Department function. And in fact, when the media would begin to ask about that, the Holy Land Foundation spokesman would say, "Hey, you know, we're endorsed by USAID, the United States government." Another case of the Islamic African Relief Agency, IARA, was funding Al Qaeda, and they were getting millions of dollars from the United States government. More recently, in 2007, during the Bush administration, the United States government had the embassy in Yemen had contracted with a charity which used to be which used to have as one of its board members Anwar al-Awlaki, and was founded by Abdulmajid al-Zindani, one of Osama bin Laden's mentors, who was designated a terrorist by the United States government.
Amazing. Patrick, we've got just about 2 minutes left, and I want to close on something that sort of goes right to the heart of the matter and you can speak to personally. What we've been dealing with here in the course of this conversation is a whole slew of things that I think will be offensive to most Americans, certainly patriotic Americans, people who don't want their country destroyed from within by our hands at the behest of and through the machinations of folks like the Muslim Brotherhood. One of the things, as I touched on a moment ago, that seems to be making this possible, at least in part, is the effort to suppress people like yourself, Stephen Coughlin, one of our colleagues on the Team B report, and others, from engaging in training that might help counteract some of this behavior, or at least put it in the kind of harsh light that it deserves. Very quickly, tell us the story of what's happened to you in that regard.
Well, many of us have been illegally blacklisted. I mean, it's against federal law to impede somebody from applying for a federal contract. And the Muslim Public Affairs rolled out a report on September 11th last year, the same day that our embassy in Cairo was sieged and the consulate in Benghazi, Libya, was attacked. And they issued their blacklist of 25 what they called pseudo-experts. That they deemed should not be teaching government classes, and
only people like them should be teaching them. In other words, including people who are very much aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood, like the Muslim Public Affairs Council is.
Yeah, and of course, you know, those of us who are on the blacklist, you know, we. The group that did this, Muhammad Salam al-Mariati, the head of MPAC, you know, he has a degree, you know, he has a MBA, you know, he has no expertise in Islamic law.
Patrick Poole, I'm afraid we have to leave it at that. This has been a fascinating hour. It has flown by. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. Congratulations again on this really splendid piece, Blind to Terror, the U.S. Government's Disastrous Muslim Outreach Efforts and the Impact on U.S. Middle East Policy. Please, folks, check this out. If you read nothing else this year, read Middle East Review of International Affairs, Patrick Poole's piece. Keep up the good work, my friend. Come back to us again soon. We'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Effie.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.